Hi, everybody. It's Mind Rolling, and I'm with some very special people to me. Well, one of them I've never met before, but he looks pretty special. my old buddy and someone who's involved with the Be Here Now Network, Jared Levy. Jared, welcome. It's been a while since we've done any kind of podcasting. Jared does a lot behind the scenes. Say that again.
Good to be back.
Yes. And today, at the prompting of Jared, we have Martin here. Martin Winicki. Is that pronounced right, rather?
Winicki.
Okay. And Martin is here representing a wonderful... I'm going to say things, and you may go, wait, that's not what... we're about, but utopian is the word that comes to mind, a utopian community in Portugal called Tamara, and it's a global peace school, amongst other things, I think. And there's a book associated with it called Terra Nova, Global Revolution and the Healing of Love. And there's it's a very fascinating book and has a lot of materials. It's almost something you just sort of can't read through. You got to pick it up and you know, read a chapter and kind of contemplate it. It's very 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 deep, and it has a lot of ambitious ideas, shall we say, to heal a lot of the suffering that is going on this planet these days, and some other ideas that. Are really interesting and worthy of discussion that we're going to get into later in the podcast. But Martin, why don't you just first of all tell? Martin was just telling me. I said, "Well, you look pretty young. He looks like in his mid-20s or something." And he said, "Well, I've been here for 10 years." When I asked him, so Martin, how did you get there when you were a kid, a teenager?
First of all, thank you for this invitation for this podcast. I arrived here with at the age of 16, so this was 10 years ago. Kind of a part of a search that I was on in my young youth, so to say, looking for a place, or looking for a pathway actually in life where I can have the feeling that my life makes sense and that I'm going into an educational path where I can contribute to a kind of world that I want to live in. I grew up in Germany. I was involved with different political movements. I woke up kind of with 14 to when there was a moment in this part of Germany where I grew up with the rise of certain fascist movements, and I just knew something is going fundamentally wrong, and I cannot just go down the path that my parents, my teachers just suggest to me. And so I was kind of shaken, and this led me on a search to go in touch with different movements, different spiritual groups, I felt kind of resonance with many things people said, but I still never felt that it offered an answer to what I was looking for in general in my life. I didn't just want to have a little piece that I can engage in, just a political piece or a spiritual piece, but I wanted a different life. And then I got to know people that told me, you have to get to know this place in Portugal. I didn't know much about it. I came with them here. And it was an interesting experience, first of all, and it was it brought me in touch with something that I needed really a long time to understand what it actually was, and it had to do with the experience of community and the experience of being fully able to trust other people. This was in a way the starting point. And then what really drew me into Tamara to come here was an invitation for a 3-year education program for young people and for peace workers from around the world to study in 3 years everything you need to establish a peace model. And this was the point where I said, okay, I'm off. I'm skipping school and I'm joining this adventure. Mm. This is how I got here.
Huh. And without your parents, right? I mean, so you came there, you were 14 or something, 15?
Yeah, I came here with 16. I mean, at the beginning, I made a deal with my parents that it would be kind of a gap year arrangement. So they said you go there for 1 year, then you come back. I came there, I completed the 1 year, and then I kind of I ended up staying here. So I didn't go back in the end. My parents were freaked out in the beginning. They thought it was a cult. But then when they got to know the place, they actually realized that there was something special, even though they were never like in any alternative kind of like they're pretty mainstream, but they were touched by something which they saw as authentic and meaningful. And so this was, yeah, it was okay.
So, all right, well, tell us a little bit about what describe what this community is. And I, after reading, of course, about it and getting Jared's feedback on it, it does hark back for me back in the day when I was, you know, communities and communes were a large part of what was going on back in the late 60s, early 70s. So, but tell us
Yeah.
about it. What is this community and what is it composed of?
So Tamara is a peace research center. So it's essentially trying to create a holistic model, a trying to showcase what a new form of society could look like that is based on trust and cooperation between people, but also between people and nature, people and animals, a society that is based on decentralized, self-sufficient forms of life, one that is basically free of any form of violence. And I mean the project really came. It started from this from the attempt of the social movements. I mean, it's also what you just referred to of also the movements in the 60s and 70s, where people started to dream about this kind of society, and the founders actually saw that this would always remain a dream unless you actually create the life structures, the social and ecological structures that allow people to coexist in trust. I mean, trust is such an easy term to use, but it's the deepest thing to do, because you have to turn around everything that our culture has set up. You have to revolutionize people's way of coexistence, work relations, love relationships, the whole ways of production, the relation to nature. And so what Tamara is trying to do is to cr is a, it is a place of research, trying to model in all these different areas. It's researching on what this would look like to coexist in trust and cooperation, and it is also trying to empower people around the world that want to engage in the creation of a humane alternative through education. So we are educating young people, students, but also partner projects in both the global north and the south, and it's creating a network around the world where further such stations arise. So it's essentially a research center, an education place, and trying to inspire a larger network.
And this comes from a man named Dieter Duhm. Is that correct? I know that there's a woman involved whose name I can't remember, but he wrote the book, Terra Nova. Is he still alive, by the way?
Yeah, he's 70. He's turning 74 in a few days. He founded. I mean, he was the one who had the vision of the project at first, but then it was actually several people kind of founding the project, including Sabine Lichtenfels, his partner. And like they're kind of they were the main founders in the beginning, and they're both still involved with the project now, running for 38 years.
Amazing. Okay, and then all of a sudden you invite this friendly hippie Jared Levy to come on and pop into it in Portugal. And I mean, Jared could have been with me in the late 60s or early 70s at one of these communes. So, you know, he seems like a prime candidate for this experiment. So, all right, Jared, tell us what happened. You went down there and you knew, I mean, you knew about it a little bit. I don't know if you did you read the book before you went down there, Terra Nova?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I met Martin and Benjamin, who is one of the other kind of people in the leadership there, at a conference at the United Nations last summer, where it was a very inspiring conference called Nexus, looking at how there's a large wealth transfer happening right now from baby boomers to millennials, and how these millennials want to do good things on the planet, want to use this money to towards purpose, and don't really know where to put that energy or resources yet. And Benjamin and Martin were invited there to speak about Tamara. It was really interesting because, we've been around. I mean, my wife and I, Jyoti, we've traveled with you to, India, and I've been to kibbutzes in Israel. I've been around to other eco villages around the planet. And what I've seen in most of those other places, and not to completely characterize, but what I've run into is, more of a kind of dropout, an expat, type mentality. It's like, I don't agree with how society's moving, and so we're gonna drop out. We're gonna go over here. We're gonna all love each other, which usually doesn't work out in the best way sometimes because they haven't built the proper, container. And we're gonna, have solar and water and all these things. And then, you 2 years later, the projects kind of sometimes don't go so well or whatever. But it is this dropout mentality. And what I loved hearing about Benjamin and Martin was, and Tamara was the was this real responsibility that they were feeling to kind of crystallize, as you said, utopia, create this concrete utopia, show that it's possible in one place on the planet, inspire other of these places to pop up, so these healing biotopes, as they call them, to pop up, and then distribute that information. So it was really the opposite of dropping out. It was saying, I don't agree, but I'm not apathetic in this. I have responsibility, and so we want to create, what can that new earth look like? And so, that was the meeting that I had with them. And then when I read the book and went deeper on some of the philosophy that laid beneath, I was really, taken back by kind of the holistic model. I mean, it's a truly integrated holistic model. And when I went there, and what I'd love to hear, Martin even talk a little bit more about is, I mean, I was blown away. They've got one of the world's top, solar scientists, this guy Jürgen, that used to be a rocket scientist working in solar. They've got this other gentleman, Berndt, who's working in water retention landscapes. And I mean, it's extremely advanced. So in my travels around the world and everything, I think a lot of us have this feeling. We're walking around and it's like, something's not right. I mean, whether it's, you see another Trump debate, or you're seeing, other things going on in society that maybe you don't agree with, there's this feeling that a lot of us are walking around with. And it was very interesting to drop in for 3 weeks to be in this field, this that they've created there in Tamara. So that was, that was my entrance into it. And I did bring my wife, who's 5 months pregnant, which was an interesting experience as well, because they have a lot of pretty radical. It's built on a radical philosophy of kind of love without fear, and so bringing, my beautiful pregnant wife into that as well, and studying some of the philosophy, and then seeing some of how they're able to have that freedom. It was an interesting experience for us.
Let's talk about love, because in the book, Dieter talks about destroyed love. Martin, why don't you talk about what destroyed love means to everybody, and that's working. What's that idea? What's that concept? And obviously, the concurrently to heal that. But yeah, talk about destroyed love.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the deepest part of our study actually, because I mean when we engage in creating a humane society, building community is really a, I mean it's a core piece. It's so much of the whether we are able to transform this world for the better or not has to do with whether we are able to live together in community. And there we encounter a core wound that exists between people, and it is a trauma in love. And this term, I mean, in the book it's called destroyed love. I mean, you could say that when you look to history, you see what was done like from the beginning of this patriarchal time. To the destruction of the original matriarchal religions, all the way to the Middle Ages, the Inquisition, and to today, to the violence that still happens as in a way a war between the genders, a war of the male world against the sexual nature and the religious and the spiritual self-expression of women. It is an endless story of pain, and usually when we think of love, it is something we take totally private. But in fact, this whole violence that happened throughout thousands of years of patriarchy, it left a trace of a layer of frustration, of anger, of profound disappointment in the soul of humanity on a collective level. And so we are what we face as the inability to open our hearts, or as depression, or as addiction, or as love sickness, or the inability to have relationships work out. It is actually the consequence of this collective trauma. And so this is a core understanding that there's this phrase in this project saying there can be no peace on earth so long as there's war and love. And this means, above all, there can be no peace in the world so long as we are not able to really free love from fear and embed it again in a life of trust.
Yeah, you talk also, he talks rather about the morphogenetic field of fear, and turning to trust as an antidote to that. Yeah, talk about that. Explain out morphogenetic field, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a term kind of introduced by a British scientist called Rupert Sheldrake,
Oh, yeah.
who was trying to make sense of evolution and how kind of these leaps, evolutionary leaps, happen where kind of new developments are introduced. And he really came to this understanding that evolution is not just carried out kind of by individuals, but that there is this kind of field, that there is like this invisible informational field that connects all the individuals of a species and, I mean, of the biosphere as a whole. And so you have this field kind of steering people's thoughts, people's behaviors, people's actions. And so after thousands of years where you kind of imprint over and over the same types of violence, where you repeat the same experiences of war, of escape, of destroying all the things that people loved, a morphogenetic field, so a global informational field of fear arose. So this is the even children that grow up in very protected surroundings, at some point they get kind of infected by this information of fear, simply because they live in a world that is filled with the information of fear. And so what we are trying to do is to create a kind of we also call Tamara a greenhouse of trust. So to build a place where you can break the patterns of violence by creating a structure, by creating a societal environment in which trust is possible again, And thereby, we have the hope that this cannot only then be of benefit for the small group that lives in this little place, but that this can, if it is done in sufficient depth and complexity, that this can help create a morphogenetic field of trust, which can then replace the existing field of fear and violence. Mm.
I guess I, in my own background being, you know, very much from the East, I would say that what terms I would put it in would possibly be around karma. And we have certain predilections that we engage with and creates this karmic patterns that that are maybe really another way of talking about morphogenetic, creating this morphogenetic field of fear or morphogenetic field of trust in love.
Mm.
And so these karmic patterns, the way I understand it, get created by our actions. How do you deal with individually working on oneself? Because in my understanding of how it works, to create something like you are trying to create is to change something inside each one of us to enable that creation to happen. How do you address that with people that come to the community?
Yeah, it's a good question, because also the concept of community can be misleading sometimes, because people think of collectivism right away, but actually it's something where kind of the individual informs the community and the community informs the individual. So and there's also this kind of understanding that so much of what makes me as an individual, who I am, what kind of potential I unfold, how I think, how I act in a certain situation, is shaped by the environment in which I live. And of course, this is not to say that we shouldn't engage each one in an own kind of individual ethical and spiritual commitment to transform ourselves. But above all, the work we are doing is to create a kind of social setting that has, where there is so much trust that individuals will kind of naturally want to kind of take down the patterns of defense, of attack, and come to an kind of ethical behavior where they want to support others. So this is like the creation of a social setting where like fighting and competition have no advantage anymore, because the level of mutual support, the reality of trust, is very strongly established. And this has a lot to do with a social practice of radical transparency. So this was a core has been a core and still is up till today, where the people who moved into this project did it with the vow, and in the beginning it was an experiment to say, everything that happens in me, I'm ready to reveal what is going inside of me, so that I no longer need to hide, but that I can really trust the other. And this kind of experimentation led to the understanding that actually we are so similar in both our light and our shadow sides. And if we open that up, of course not in a sense of being forced to and controlling one another, but in a sense of real trust, this is a catalyst of transformation.
Mm.
And we have developed certain social technologies to facilitate this in a protected way. This is really a core of the transformation that community allows. And and still there would be much more to say. I mean, people also walk an individual spiritual path. There are certain ethical guidelines that are kind of committing for everybody to live here. So this is just a little introduction.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just want to add, I mean, it's kind of interesting. There's So, I live up here in the Bay in San Francisco, and after I met Benjamin and Martin, they were actually on they did a couple what they called love schools out here. Sabine Lichtenfeld, who he mentioned, and Benjamin and others came out and did these love schools around the Bay in Berkeley. And I think there were a couple of them, and there's actually one coming up this weekend in Esalen. And people, I mean, sold out, waiting list, like people, I heard many people that couldn't get into it were, really upset that they couldn't. So it's interesting to hear a lot of the concepts, obviously, that are coming up around Tamara and these social technologies that they have, that they've been working on 40 years, and that I actually, that we took part in over there. I mean, there's a real desire and want for it over here in the West, and it and it's particular in the United States. So, and there's even to go as far as there's groups. I mean, many communities here in California that have houses and kind of smaller community type environments that are coming together and looking at forming a healing biotope on. In somewhere in North America, as kind of a second research center, from Tamara, that Tamara would help mentor, as they're doing with, some other communities around the world right now. So it's been interesting to see, this is going on at Tamara. They're researching this, and now they're actually, not just forming this healing biotope in Portugal, and really that's still, work in progress, as they would say, but starting to take some of these outward and seeing the reaction in the United States is it's pretty fascinating. And I hear people talking about it all over the place here. You mentioned Love School, and everyone, it's juicy. I mean, people want to talk about this stuff.
I go back though and say, you're talking about transformation, you're talking about trust, you're talking about unconditional love, although we haven't mentioned that, a love that's beyond the business that of people in relationship. I guess it's hard for me to grasp any of this without that individual actually doing the kind of work that's necessary for that person to transform, to trust themselves to start with. Because unless you trust yourself and unless you have that self-honesty, there's no way that you can reach out to anybody and have any kind of profound transformation with another human being. So I guess I keep hearing of the external, and I really do wonder about the in terms of the education and so on. Is there education around, our biggest byword today, mindfulness, which means a lot of things to a lot of people, but in a general way, it certainly is about awareness. It certainly is about meditation, being able to develop that true nature inside yourself that the Buddhists talk about. So where does that lie in this whole thing? That's my question.
Well, there is really, I mean, I was just pointing it out to show that actually not to say that it's just about working on the external level, but in a way making the image, the picture of spirituality more broad, because it in the end spirituality involves everything you do. And still, I mean, in the core of Tamara, there is an education place that is dedicated to exactly this, to the inner transformation, and to opening up to the universal or divine potential that we human beings carry inside ourselves, and to the we often call it the inner shift, like the turn we have to do in our thoughts, in our actions, in our reactions necessary to embody this potential. And so this is through mindfulness, this is through consciousness work, it is through becoming witness of what we are actually thinking and doing in our daily lives. And there's also another part that really has to do with finding I mean, almost back to an indigenous source of realizing again our relatedness to all of life as a form of reconnecting. So there is another research area that you could call it that it's spiritual ecology, where we are trying to get in touch with the animated aspect of the earth, of plants, of animals, and to realize that we are part of a that what we are is the relationships with all else. And so this is another, like, these two research areas are really they're really essential to Tamara's existence, and to the inner cohesion of the community.
Well, there's one chapter here that's called Toward the One in the book. All beings are interconnected in one existence and one consciousness. All beings carry the same elementary information of life in the nuclei of their cells. All carry the same basic mathematical structure in their genetic code. All beings strive for contact and unity toward the One. In this unity, a religious component is at work. I prefer the word spiritual because of that word religion, which for some people is tough, as well as God. So this is very much, you know, everything that I personally have come to understand in my work in the early days with the psychedelics. Obviously, that was the opening of the door. And then in my meeting with this particular realized being in India, which I think you know who Ram Dass is, and he met this mm-hmm. being, and many of us went over and met him as well. And that was a direct understanding of this interconnectivity. I'm just curious. Obviously, Dieter, there's many, many analogies in this book with Eastern thought, you know, from mm-hmm. Anand, yeah. joy and bliss and so on. What was his experience? Did he spend time in India, or is this through study? What prompted him in this way?
He was in India, but not very extensively. I mean, it was a whole lot of different things. I mean, he was trained as a psychoanalyst, and he went really deep into exploring the inner realm of humanity as a practicing psychoanalyst. He was really shaken at the time back then by the political situation, by Vietnam, by the necessity to really break out of the patterns of conventional life, and then being shaken on this level to really find a new form of life. He went into all kinds of experiments. I mean, of psychedelics. This was a strong part
Really?
for him to realize kind of what he describes as the sacred matrix, as this parallel universe of interconnectedness. But then it was also the strong research of trying to find ways how the other reality that he would experience on psychedelics, how he could experience it without it. And so in the beginning phase of the project, they did all kinds of experiments to tap into this other reality, like things like they called it Lake Olympics, for example, in the winter, where they would have a contest of who could stay longest in ice cold water, and realizing that if they would be able to connect with this with this divine power, that they could break the borders of where doctors would say, after 20 minutes you're definitely dead, but they stayed in the water for 35 minutes. So they did a lot of experimentation to really bring this down in a sober space, also with arts. So with theater, with all kinds of forms. And it was actually the realization that this is a reality that is always there, that there is this guiding, this principle of guidance, this principle of self-organization, of self-healing, that this is just part of life. And also they had the experience of that even severe illnesses that occurred in the community, that they could heal it through creating spaces where people could deeply shift from fear to trust. So even diseases like cancer would dissolve. So it was an ongoing experience all the way to today, where there are experiments in spiritual communication with wild animals that would destroy our fields, and to realize that on a level of prayer, we are actually able to reach out to the spirit of these beings, and they would change their behavior. They would start to cooperate. A conscious communication would begin. So in a way, the whole project is a history of a window that opened into another reality of life that has strongly to do with this interconnectedness of all that exists, and realizing that it's an endless discovery journey that just keeps on growing. And sometimes it's even the feeling that we are still just at the beginning of stepping into this new world.
What's your experience, Jared? Once you were there, you spent a few weeks there. What are, in terms of your perspective, your inner perspective, your I know this fits so much with your philosophy, knowing you as well as I do, that this is like a tea for you. But what was your actual direct experiences as you became involved on a day-to-day basis during that time?
Well, as you know, I mean, so I heard this quote when I was there that that has really stuck with me. It's our spiritual duty to be joyful and to use our unique gifts to benefit all. And that's how I try to live my life. And being in that field there, I mean, there is a palpable field there that is created. I mean, it brought me into thinking about in this kind of in moving towards a better way of life, there's resonance holders and there's activists in this movement, in these movements that are happening. And I would say that Tamara is both. There's a resonance holding that is going on there. To drop into is just fascinating, and it's a radical experiment in what what this field of trust can look like. And for I love Sabine. I mean, what she said to my wife and I when we were leaving, she said, we don't expect people. We would say for people to come visit Tamara, like, you're going to visit some tribe out in the Amazon. It's like you're not coming, like, you're not, you don't put the bone in your nose and start dancing around the fire. Like, come and observe a little bit. It's like, it can be dangerous to just drop in and think that you're living it out in society, and then you just drop in for a couple weeks and all of a sudden you can be enlightened into this way of life. So for me, there was a palpable field. I was like a kid at a candy store in terms of, I was a part of the thinking school. So every day there were these amazing talks around, for instance, what is the worldview around our connection with animals, our communication with animals? And I'm seeing it there. I mean, when he's talking about this cooperation with animals, I mean, there's chickens there that are, and foxes, and living in the same, the same area that the foxes aren't eating the chickens. There's wild boars coming through, not messing with their fields. There's a place where they're cooperating with rats in communication with rats. And this is a place of study. It was really fascinating. One of the things that I'm most fascinated by, and I mean, I could go on for forever because it is a T question for me. But what I'd love to hear Martin talk about, because one thing that really fascinated me was the love and water. There's this real, this very core foundational belief around healing water on the planet, and especially being here in Northern California right now and what we're feeling with the drought. I would love for you to talk a little bit about the healing of water and, you know, the connection between love and water as you all see it.
Yeah. I mean, as I mentioned, the goal of the project since the beginning has been to create an example for a decentralized and self-sufficient community. And I mean, living as we do in a place that is also affected by drought in a way, like almost exactly the same like it is in California, it seemed really hard to imagine how this could work. And about 10 years ago, we got in touch with an ecological visionary from Austria called Sepp Holzer, who came here and kind of brought us this vision of creating what he called a water retention landscape. And so for the past 10 years, we have implemented this. It's still not fully completed, but it's been completed quite largely, implemented quite largely, where a simple measure was kind of put in place to create lakes, so we call them water retention spaces, in the valley where the rainwater would fall in the winter, to be able to stay on the land, to sink into the ground, to refill the aquifers, and to kind of nurture the land all throughout the year, and where the water is not just, you know, rushing down in winter, causing floods and damages, and then in summer you have it's totally dry and you have drought and everything is dying out basically. But you again create a permanent water situation, and the effect implementing this measure had on our land was incredible. It was like a revelation of seeing how fast nature is actually regenerating itself, how quickly trees grow again, how you can create fields around these lakes where so much food is growing, how wildlife is returning. And we really saw the possibility of how you could restore nature, how you could also repair the damage that we've been doing. And then we got to know people who did similar things, even on much larger scales in India and Slovakia and China, seeing how doing this kind of water retention landscape on a bigger scale even changes the climate pattern. So where it's not only possible to adapt to climate change, but to restore climate change. And I think what you were trying to point me to was this analogy of seeing that when you look to the social situation, that the kind of you have a very similar situation where in our culture, through the destruction of now looking on the ecological side, through the destruction of forests, through the destruction of the natural system, the water that comes down as rain falls on a bare ground. There is not anymore this fertile topsoil layer that can really take in the water, where it can kind of refill the ground, but it just becomes violent, it rushes off, it destroys everything, and then there is nothing left. It's like a depleted field, and where the more we studied the ecological situation, we see it's actually exactly the same, because community is lost as this fertile topsoil layer that allows the powers of Eros and water that kind of come in to land and to find calmness and to move in the way they actually want. These high life powers within people, they become violent, they destroy, they create floods of a violent power, and where we can also see that in both areas it's really to create vessels that hold these powers in a way that they can move freely, that they can move in a held natural way. And so it's actually fascinating to see that water is so central to nature, love is so central to the human being, and that in both areas you can make visible the same pattern.
Hmm. That's a wonderful analogy.
I would just add as well. I mean, it's pretty fascinating. You know, when you look at there's this whole field of study now called biomimicry, you know, where looking at how we in our even planes, we've looked at, you know, how swans are in flight and design planes off of this and things. And what I saw at Tamara that was really interesting, I mean, whether it's the water, as Martin eloquently put there, or I mean, the work they're doing with solar energy and energy autonomy, really, it's about taking the harm out of the system. They're really looking at every single system that you deal with in your existence and say, how do we reduce the harm that is going on in that system? And there's a feeling, you know, one of the women there was telling me about there's and I noticed it myself that when you take a shower and you know that water is coming in and there's been no harm in that system, there's a power that you feel. I mean, it's a very palpable feeling. It's like when you're eating food that you know is organic, there's no harm in that system, and you really consciously think about the planting of that seed and the watering of it and the growing and throughout the whole system, people were paid well, you know, fair trade, the whole thing. And then you put that in your mouth and you chew it and you think about that. There is a palpable feeling that awakens inside you. That it's sensual, you know. So I would just say they're looking at that in every single aspect of life. And one that I do not want to let Martin off the podcast without talking about, when we were there, there were two births within a few days of each other. And the you know, being a first time, I'm gonna moving into being a first time dad. We have a, you know, baby girl coming in January, and that we're really excited about. To see how the birth process was handled in this community was absolutely incredible. It was unbelievable. And you know, there was, I mean, 150 people from the community in the room with this woman singing, you know, and well, I mean, is out of this world. It was like nothing, you know. So Martin, maybe you can talk a little bit about, I mean, you know, you could go on forever about the way that you all raise kids and look at, you know, death and dying, which is another subject that's, I know, very near and dear to Ram Dass's you know, organization and whatnot. But maybe the birthing, because we got to witness two of them, was amazing.
I mean, the basic thing is that when you really live community, then the things that, like the sacred things that usually you can only share in a very small protected circle, they're more and more grows the courage to live them with the community. It's like a certain tribal sense almost, where that comes back. And I mean, this birth that you just mentioned, it was such a sacred moment where a woman, the mother who gave birth to this child, she was so full of love and trust. Being in this birth moment, she really invited the whole community in to participate in this moment, and it was a sacred moment of ritual of celebration. For me, it was really like remembering, like the feeling, aha, this is how it felt to be part of the original tribes, where everything that happens in life, the birth, the initiation, you know, everything, all the way to dying, it's not, you don't put it into some corner, but it's part of your life, and so you participate in it. And this is really a sense also of, I can say personally, this is a sense also of richness I have in my life, because I don't need to own everything personally. You know, being I don't need to, you know, to be a father myself necessarily to participate in a birth, or to be with children, or to be, you know, I don't know, to have a certain profession, but it's the feeling it is part of my life because it is part of the community I'm in. And this is a, I mean, above all, I'm very deeply grateful for this possibility.
Have you, this all reminds me of Island, Aldous Huxley's book. If you've read that, okay. There's one core quote in this book for me, and obviously it represents, it has to represent the core of what the community is about. And it's a quote from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who actually is, of course, extraordinarily well known and was a developer of conscious dying, did a lot of work with Ram Dass as well. In its true sense, learning to live in the right way means learning love. True love does not make claims of possession or any conditions. To my knowledge, the only thing that really heals people is unconditional love. Love is what gives life its meaning. And that's the only thing that that only thing, I mean, the core thing that we took back in our experience with Ram Dass and all of us who went to India to meet this particular being was exactly that. And it is a difficult thing to attain, obviously. That's why I harped a little bit in this conversation, in this podcast, around the individual work on oneself, because if there isn't that, no matter of any community, nothing can happen without that, in my experience. And I've been in a lot of different communities myself. I've been in one particularly since those days in India where many of us gathered together and are still, although we may live in different parts, it's a, you know, it's a more ethereal kind of community, but one that comes together often. There's one, and this is my little chat with Jared before we got on actually last night after going through this stuff and reading. There's one part that I can't grok, as they say in the old days. I can't absorb it. And that's the whole thing around the sexual part of what liberating sexuality is, that chapter. I got to give you a chance to, you know, tell me what in the world one could be thinking where you can this whole thing of getting beyond jealousy, getting beyond possession, and so on, those things being, of course, one side of it, and then. To me, the reality is in any of that kind of relationship, unless you're in, you know, 2,000 years ago doing tantric practices in India with experts and realized beings who are taking you through that kind of process, without that, in our world today, which is, well, it's a very difficult, polarized world, right? And you mentioned, and this, of course, Dieter mentions a lot in the book about what's gone on, the patriarch, you've mentioned it, the patriarchal world that we live in, what the abuse that women get, the inability of men to absorb their feminine, to display their feminine sides, all of that. Yet still, well, you should just tell me what it is that this concept and how you are working with it, which is very difficult for me to understand that one could get through the natural human polarization in terms of desire. When there's desire and you've got lust, you know, that does not make for unconditional love.
I mean, you kind of describe exactly the like the reality that we live in today, and kind of, I mean, pointing out what a tricky issue sexuality is. And at the same time, I mean, you know, the when the project was founded, it was they only realized by building community what a core issue sexuality really was and still is, because it is so much at the center of a lot of our longings we have as people, what we think about, what we are busy with, why we fight, why we compete with others. It so much turns around this topic and the question of whether we are able to live love on Earth has to do whether we are able to develop trust in this area. And so above all, it is or let's say it's the research on the sexual issue. It starts in a way with the acknowledgement that sexuality is a societal, not just an individual, but a societal issue that requires healing if we want to create a world without violence. I mean, how much of the drive energy that leads to the massacres that are happening in this world today is in the root a sexual energy which runs through a psychological system where the heart is not able to open anymore. And so this is actually the first thing that that in the work of transparency, in the work of trying to create community, we have decided not to exclude this issue, but to take it in, to make it an issue that, you know, where when couples have issues with each other, that we don't say, oh, it's your private issue, and maybe some friends can speak with you, but it is not a matter of the community. But first of all, to see this, whatever happens on a sexual level in a community, it will impact the whole social system, and going into it, like the founding generation, they saw that there is a deeply ingrained cultural schizophrenia in this area where the understanding in this culture of love and of sex has been really mixed up and confusing in a way that people are almost unable to be really truthful with one another. Couples break apart because they live in a system where they are in a way forced to lie to each other. In order to maintain a love relationship with somebody, you usually have to hide the truth of your attractions, your sexual truth. And so this is where, of course, it gets really tricky and controversial, and there is also a lot of misunderstanding about the work we are doing, because they saw that in order to really to put relationships on a truthful basis, they would need to create a space where people can articulate first of all, and then if it generates trust, also follow erotic desires that even if they are not in like in their partnership, and this was kind of a journey of trying to actually heal something in the human heart where we are not divided anymore between this one longing that is so intense that is for intimacy and partnership, and the other one that is for wild adventures, for, you know, for sexuality, where it, in a way it is not about love in the first place. It is about desire, and I think so much of the desire that leads us away from love, that makes it an opponent to love, it is not the desire itself, but it is that in our culture desire has been so demonized, it has been suppressed, and if it there is never a place where you can share desire in a way that is it lands in a trusting surrounding. You can maybe do it in a hidden way, but it is always the explosive that will break a relationship, break a community. And the founders of this project said, no, actually it is a life energy, it is a divine energy, and if we are able to offer this energy a vessel of trust, it can lead to love rather than destroy love. And what we are in at the moment is really this research of creating of how people can establish reliable partnerships in such a culture of free love, and seeing that that actually these two things are not contradictory either. The only thing that creates the contradiction is the fear, and seeing. Of course, the project has existed for 38 years. I would not say that we are kind of that the issue is kind of solved, and you know, it's just completed. It's still a long way to go, but we see that that we can create a world where we don't need to suppress our longings, but where following our longings will lead us to this state of oneness, of unconditional love, that you spoke mm-hmm. about.
Okay, we're going to leave it at tricky. Okay. This is way tricky as far as we could have a 2-hour conversation about this for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really a deep issue. And so it's just a little introduction in yeah. order to really understand it. I would recommend, I mean, Jared mentioned the Love School, to really dive into it deeply.
Hmm. Yeah.
This is such an interesting topic as a part of the philosophy and there. And I think in being, you know, a journeyer on, you know, Raghu, we've been to a lot of places together, and it's very hard for me to conform to any dogma overall completely, right? Or conform to some religion. I was raised Jewish, studied Buddhism, was, you know, now Hindu and whatnot. So I'm some Jew-Budu, you know, mixture of sorts. And, you know, I would just say that along the journey, in our spiritual journeys, we pick up these, you know, these things. And then there is a lot here. I mean, as a stop in anyone's journey to understand some of the philosophies and the things that are happening here at Tamara and in the book Terra Nova, I think it's a fascinating stop in your journey. And to be a movement builder, whether you're an activist or a resonance holder, or, you know, working on your own spiritual journey or your own difficulties in love, or, you know, wanting to work on a permaculture project, whatever, it's an interesting stop in that journey.
Yeah.
One other thing that I want to just put out there around transparency. You know, I'm not going to go through the whole story because most people who listen to this podcast know about Ram Dass's, you know, introduction to Maharaji, where Maharaji really broke open Ram Dass was when he was sitting in front of him and he said, you know, your mom, and he said, you were out under the stars last night thinking of your mom, and he knew everything that Ram Dass looked into his eyes, and Ram Dass thinks, oh, if he knows that, oh God, he knows that too, and oh God, he knows that. And, you know, and all the things that flooded in front, and he looked up at Maharaji and he's looking at him with unconditional love. And there was this heart opening that happened that someone could know everything, all his shadows, all of that, and still look at him with unconditional love. And what I would say is, sexuality, those things aside, what Tamara is doing is creating a community that is looking at you with complete transparency, knowing all of your shadow, all that, and with unconditional love. And just to meditate on that thought, that a community can look at you for everything that you are, all your thoughts, all your fucked up desires, whatever, and with unconditional love hold you, is an interesting concept.
Yeah.
And to imagine a world where that potentially, where that could be possible, you know, for me, that as a takeaway, to sit with that has been a nice takeaway for me.
Yeah, inspiring. Sounds like you were inspired. This is great, Martin, and so many wonderful ideas here. The book is available, Martin told me earlier, on Amazon, Terra Nova. You can go through our portal on Be Here Now Network and Mind Rolling and get the book. Dieter, Dieter Duhm, Duhm. Martin was instrumental in translating and editing the book with a couple of other people. And Martin, people going to a website to check you out, please give us the website. Check the community out.
Tamara.org, Tamera.
Dot org.
As well, Terra. Sorry.
Dot org. Dot org.
Yeah. And also Terranova.tamara.org is another page for more offerings.
Yeah, and we'll have all of that up on the page, on the Mind Rolling page on Be Here Now Network. And this has been fascinating, and just the fact that some people, and you know, this has been going on for 38 years, have created this intention to help heal a very, very disturbed planet at this point, which has become more and more so over these 38 years, I think is beyond admirable, no matter, you know, as Jared said, putting aside the whole free love deal, which, by the way, I was a big part of back in the day. This was a so it's not like, you know. But again, thank you, Martin. Thank you, Jared. Appreciate this. It's been illuminating. And thank you
for your questions.
Yeah, and we hope to continue this dialogue as it goes on, see, you know, how the experiment maybe moves over to the States and some of the stuff you're doing here. We'll talk about that further down the line. This is Mind Rolling. We'll see you here on the BeHereNowNetwork.com and next week. Bye-bye.